Welcome to Do Wonders, the podcast that highlights the incredible work and stories of the Century Autism team. I'm Timothy Yeager.
And I'm Lisa Cunningham. In each episode, we take you behind the scenes to meet the dedicated professionals who make a difference in the lives of our clients and their families.
Through these conversations, you'll get to know the personal journeys, the challenges, and the successes that truly define our team.
Whether you're part of the Centria family or just curious about the amazing work happening here, we're glad you're with us.
So join us in diving into the wonders of Centria Autism. Well, Ashley, I am so excited to have you join us. For those listening, Ashley is a director of clinical services at our Tempe location and one of my favorite people at Centria. So I'm really happy to have this time to talk to you.
That makes me uncomfortable. And I'm just going to say that you're a liar, just for my own ego.
If it helps, you know, while we were talking earlier today, he also said that same thing. So, you know, whether it's in front of an audience or not, you know, he's at least consistent.
One thing about me, I hate praise, public praise. So just now my stomach hurts even more.
This is the intervention. So while we work through those, how about you just start off with an easy question. How you got in the field of ABA?
So I was a teacher for 6 years and was focusing on EBD because we were doing all basically punishment procedures all the time, like planned ignoring, all the things. And it wasn't working because it didn't work. And I was looking for something different. And I kind of just ran into behavior analysis, for lack of a better word. I read a book. It's like managing children in the school or something, that kind of gave more of those antecedent strategies and was specific for teachers and written by a BCBA. So then I just Googled BCBA and then moved in that direction.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And where were you living?
I was in Michigan, but Michigan. I was also, before that, I knew more about the OBM world because I did my undergrad at Western Michigan University. Mm. And my college roommate was focusing in on OBM.
That's great. Yeah. So what an awesome thing of like, hey, this strategy doesn't work. I'm going to go find what does work.
I was desperate. Working. I had bruises on me like the size of Texas and it was rough.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I think speaking a little more, and I think you'll probably remember this, you've had quite a journey with us at Centria. You mentioned Michigan. Now you're in Arizona. Could you walk us through that path of the journey that you've had with us? And, you know, maybe a little flavor spin on that. If you could also just walk through some of, you've had a journey from, you know, individual contributor, mentor, leader, some of the mindset shifts you also had to go through as you personally evolved into those roles.
Ooh, that's a good question. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of talk about where I started.
Yeah.
So I interviewed with Jessica Hines, who's the new area director of the East Coast. Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the fence of even coming because I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the time. And we were going to move our whole lives, things like that. And I decided to just kind of take the jump. And it was my second time actually being with an ABA company. And at that point, my other company was also a private equity and it just wasn't a good experience. Like there wasn't really any coaching, mentoring or anything, but I wanted to try and I wanted to try kind of in a not more independent capacity, but like I knew I was going to get good coaching because we talked about it during my interview and like I just had seen and talked to people. So I kind of jumped in and then I was with the company for about a year where I was growing my caseload. I was in an area of Michigan that primarily doesn't have a ton of service, not ton of services, I shouldn't say, but like I was the only in-home clinician in the area. So I was kind of more independent even there, but it helped me kind of build that community and get to know people and then really have me reaching out and building like those connections to be able to ask questions. Cause I didn't know what I didn't know at the time.
Sure.
But one thing I think I do well, that makes me uncomfortable to say, is I do ask questions and I do look for clarity on things. Now, is the way I always do that the best? No, it can be sometimes very direct. And I have had to learn kind of how to shape those pieces of communication by just doing a lot of reflection after a situation. Like, okay. I can't think of a situation offhand, but we've all had those situations where we're like, oh my gosh, I just did that poorly and awful. Like,
yeah. The reflection on the approach. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then coming back to it, being like, you know what? Next time I'm going to do it this way.
Yeah.
So kind of through doing a lot of that question, my work myself through that year, I then interviewed with Timothy and Hillary for the clinical leadership resident position. Was that the title?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And then during this time also, I was doing a lot of like internal work on myself to just make sure that like I was taking a lot of the biases out. And for anybody that's kind of going into this field, I think that's important to do, is to kind of check our own biases and do like our own self-reflection often to know what we're bringing to the table versus someone else to the table.
Yeah.
But during that clinical leadership resident position is really where I really honed in on those skills of how to kind of communicate and drive forward progress to be able to help others. That sounds like a bunch of like word salads, kind of as I'm saying it, honestly. But like,
I'm tracking.
Yeah, I'm following too. Yeah. It's like introspection, understanding behaviors that can be productive, not productive,
in
like knowing that to help others grow. Yeah, you've got to do some self-growth too. Yeah.
And like, that's kind of where my kind of passion went from really helping a client be able to make progress to helping teach clinicians how to make progress with clients by giving them kind of that direct feedback and giving them that rationale. And then when I know I've said this theory many times, but I have this life theory where you can always build one connection with somebody. It may be hard sometimes. Sometimes it has to start with as simple as, I call it the Diet Coke, where I only had a Diet Coke that I liked with somebody once and I just focused on that. And that used to be kind of, I thought we could always work from the Diet Coke. But recently with that clinical leadership resident and now coming into a move from Michigan to Arizona is where once that Diet Coke's not enough, you have to kind of set that standard of, hey, you need to be here. I will help you get here. But if you can't get here, we have to do something else. And that's kind of where that's all went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe to extrapolate from that and tell me if you Please feel do. This resonates, but
yeah.
I think from connection, right, comes trust. And I think, you know, from that trust, you have the basis of a relationship, or you could, right? And that's where I think that you can work on then being just really honest with somebody, or as people call direct, right? And I think usually it's just being honest instead of sugarcoating things. And I love that because I think, you know, just with your thought evolution, that's just so, sometimes being direct or even being honest can be really misplaced if you don't have that mutual shared understanding that it's coming from a good place and that the desire is to help benefit that individual. Mm-hmm. But it takes time to breed that connection right in the beginning.
It does. Because like, if the first time you're meeting somebody, you're like, hey, I really hate everything about you. I hate everything that you're doing. You have nowhere to grow, really. Like, if that's your first interaction with somebody, you can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I was going to say, one thing that you said that resonates with me, Ashley, is Ellie Kazemi, Dr. Ellie Kazemi, spoke at Calaba this past year, and she talked about, she's interviewed, you know, hundreds of people from behavior technicians to BCBAs to directors to executives in organizations, and what she walked away was there's a lot more in common than not, and that like perspectives are the challenge across those roles, right? Like a majority of people question intentions and both up and down the organizational structure. And that if people could just take the perspective of these people and the company and your employees, that like a lot more growth could happen in the field. And there's a lot more flexibility to give more credit to the people that are working within the space than judgment. And I'm assuming what was maybe said within your journey is, you know, some reflection on past experiences, maybe even reflections on current experiences with our company, like how those may have been interpreted or not interpreted, and some evolution that happened along your journey.
Yeah. And here's the question I always have is like, how do we teach others to remove that bias? like, yes, we can model it. Yes, we can do those things. But in kind of the way that I usually approach it is I will kind of just say like, hey, this, tell me about you. Tell me about like your experiences, where you're from, and then also sharing my experiences. Like, because I come from a background that has pretty significant trauma. I myself have ADHD and I take medication, so I kind of see those perspectives, but not everybody has those perspectives. So by sharing my perspective, getting their perspective, and then also highlighting others' perspectives that come in, I think this picture behind me is a great kind of indicator of this now that I'm seeing it. Like each of these kids probably has a different background, and by being able to highlight all of those, it gives a broader picture than just like even the three of us here.
Sure.
And I think, like, to your point, in my mind, I'm assuming you have these relationships currently, which is like people that are willing to confront bias and like speak to it, right? Like, I don't know, like oftentimes I'll go to Lisa and I'm like, Lisa, this is something I'm struggling with, or this is, and Lisa will tell me, you're kind of wrong. Like this is how I perceived it. And we may want to think about like what you're like feeling or thinking about during those moments. And like having someone that you can like be honest with and direct with and have those type of conversations is like incredibly vital.
And I think I'm really lucky, like in Tempe, because I have two operations directors that I work with, and we each come from different perspectives, and we do a really good job of kind of checking and balancing each other to like be able to say like, hey, this is actually where I'm coming from, and this is where I'm coming from, and being able to meet in that middle. But that doesn't happen right away with anybody. No. So you have to start with that building, that Diet Coke, to be able to even get to that point to have that.
I was just going to say, I think that really brings me back to kind of like two things that I've noticed as like a skill set or mindset of leaders within the organization, kind of a common thread through people we've been able to host on the show, is one is just curiosity. Right. And I think that's really great at being able to cut bias off at the knees, is approaching first with curiosity instead of with, you know, a mind made up. And I think that's a great quality that you certainly, it appears to you value that. And it looks like you tried to bring that to the forefront in those discussions. And another is, you know, kind of going back to like this growth mindset, like you believe that something is possible. And I think that belief of, I know I can find a connection with somebody, I have no doubt has really served you well throughout your relationships and your career, and will continue to, you know, and I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and it was said so beautifully that, you know, fixed mindset is essentially, it's letting your own mind limit your potential on things.
Was this a Brené Brown podcast? Because I swear it was the same thing.
It was not, but I'm sure they talked to the same people. I'm a big fan of The Hidden Brain of Shankar Vedanta, and it was the individual that he was interviewing who actually is a data analyst, so and how that interacts with human behavior. So I'm sure really in line with, you know, the work we do. But yeah, I think that you help to not limit what your potential is in those relationships by seeing the art of the possible. And that's like...
Now, that being said, because I appreciate the compliment, but it makes me uncomfortable, so I'm going to go the other side, is that when we have people that are in that fixed mindset, that's kind of where I still struggle. I'll be honest with you. And I think we've all been there. Like when people are very fixed on a certain thing, that's kind of where that struggle begins. And I feel like a lot of times, like we're like, as you grow as a leader, you have to continue to model that, but then you also have to let them know, be like, hey, this is not acceptable. You cannot do this. And that power feels very uncomfortable to be able to do and manage, at least for someone like me, to be able to say, hey, you cannot have this bias. It's not allowed. Yeah.
Let's talk through that a little bit more. So like, going from like a supervising clinician at Centria to a resident to now a director, I'm sure there was a moment where you're like, if I was a director, I would do this, or I would manage people in this way, and or I would make these choices. Were there moments along your path where like your perspectives changed and like how you view like leadership and management of people?
So I'm going to share kind of how my first 2 months in Arizona went, because I came in, I was like, oh, it's going to be great. Like, I just finished up the CLR role. I've got to see a bunch of change. I had assumed that change was kind of clear across the board. It was going to look very much the same. Naive. My first month I was in Arizona, so that would have been like my third week of the role. All four of the clinicians left for a variety of reasons, none that really had to do with like the company or anything like that. Just different opportunities are moving. We called it, what is it called in hockey when you get a three people beat, when you get a three at a time? You guys know? I should know this.
I'm in California. I don't know nothing about hockey.
I don't know sport. What is it? Oh, it's like called that. A hat trick.
A hat trick? Hat
I just trick. I got really good at sports and
oh, goals. One second. Yeah. Three goals
like a hat trick.
Yeah, it's hat trick. Yeah.
I had to just find it funny. Like it's all I could do because like everything felt like I was failing at everything. Like I came in, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have so much fun. We're gonna be able to build this strong culture. I'm gonna have like my first five goals were to just kind of like we're gonna be moving into a new space, like we can focus on that. I can be looking at foundational plans. No, all of that went to the wayside because once those clinicians decided to leave for their various reasons, of course, everybody was stressed. Those who were staying were stressed. So I had to shift my perspective to being able to kind of move these people or like move these pieces, look at these pieces, grow these pieces to now, okay, we have to focus in on those relationships with those that are staying so they feel safe. And before that, I never really thought about safety as much as I think safety from the perspective of people feeling emotionally safe as I do now, where, yeah, you're not always going to come to work and love your job. That's unrealistic for any certain person. But if I can come to have them come to work and feel safe to be a, like, hey, here's where I'm at, we can grow from there. So it's kind of one thing that like really changed my perspective because I never had thought about it prior to kind of moving in those pieces. And I will say that even resonates now. We've had a lot of things happen in Tempe in the last month, both as a collective and then individually. And there's been some of them who have said like, my job right now is the only thing making me feel kind of safe and sane, which I don't think you see, you hear that a lot. So I take that as that's a win for me. I take it.
I'll Mike Tyson's best leadership quote is everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. And so,
yes! That was my punch in the face.
Yeah.
And I've grown from it as a leader. Like I have always done kind of the reflection in those pieces, kind of like I talked about at the beginning, but now I can say, okay, here's where I can feel safe. And then also like admitting when I make mistakes has always been hard for me. So like if I can't even name a mistake because you make them all the time as a human and as a leader, is when I make a mistake being like, hey, this is the mistake I made. I apologize. This is what I'm going to do next time. And then doing that next time.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of power in admitting those things and trust that comes from it as well. I've been reading a lot about some of these like athletes who are like best in the world. Right. And I think, you know, something that was really powerful, like Coco Gauff, who's like the tennis player, right? She was talking about like how she can handle working through like losses. And one of the quotes that she said is like, well, my mom did a really good job raising me to realize that I'm a human first and happen to be a tennis player and a great tennis player at that. But like my value is not in that identity, like in that. And I think, you know, there were some similar elements from like Simone Biles kind of talking about that as well, is just where you find your identity. And you know, I promise to bring this back to leadership, but in a big way, I think if you think about all of your mistakes as like, there's something wrong with me versus taking like, I'm a human, but I'm also a leader and maybe I'm a new leader, and being able to separate, just like we talk about separating the team member from the behavior, like sometimes we have to do that with ourselves so that we don't feel so attached to our behaviors. And you can very quickly then take that step back, look at it objectively and say, oh, okay, I want to do that differently next time. And here's my plan, and just more effectively move on. You know,
I'm going to think therapy for this one. I used to think my career, this is actually more of the teacher. I think I've actually gotten better with it as I've grown, like as a leader in the ABA world, the century world, whatever, I used to think my career was my entire identity. It was everything to me. Like, I, even to the point where, like, my husband knew who was my boyfriend at the time, he knew that, like, he came before my career. He was weirdly okay with it. Great man. He probably will listen to this because he's very sweet. He'll appreciate that. But he, like, when I, working through therapy and realizing that, like, the human comes first is so important because, like, you're not just your career. Like, you're also somebody who loves reading books. You love, like, I like looking at research. I like doing all of these things. And I think that comes back to kind of the whole piece of a leader is, like, that's what makes me different as a leader than Timothy, and Timothy is different than you, is that we do bring that whole picture to the forefront.
Totally.
And the truth is as a leader, our success is more than just today, right? And our success with our team is more than just what happens this week. And it's what's going to happen across the journey of our time together and working together. And in order for that journey to, like, not only just be enjoyable, but, like, maximize the ability of our team, like, we have to care about the people that we're working with, right? It's much more about our journey together and achieving these things than just achieving, you know, the goals that we have for us. To me, I think that if I was ever asked a question of, like, what changed for me as a leader, was, like, initially I thought it was, like, being a leader was getting people to do whatever you want them to do. And that's definitely evolved over time.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Ashley, not to put you through the ringer, you know, this will be the last potential stressful thing for you. But just before we wrap, I've got a two-part question for you. One, you've certainly evolved in a tremendous way, even kind of like evolving in your career, evolving in your roles here. We would
Can
love
I pause
to hear.
That for just 1 second.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
Even, if you look at it to the point where, like, since the last time I did this physically, I have like 80,000 more tattoos. It's just a weird fact that I find very interesting.
Love it.
So you've evolved with your tattoos as well.
Yes, you've evolved inside and out is what I'm hearing, which is great. Okay, so the full evolution, you as a human, you as a behavior analyst, you as living art, love it. What I'd like to hear, the first part is advice that you were given in your career that has really helped you shape the mindset and your behaviors to be more effective as a leader. And I'm happy to go first. I think, I have been given advice, I think in a couple of different ways where the most earliest, and I feel like it's the most salient, is kind of the understanding your audience. And I, was emulating what my boss had asked us to do in a divide and conquer of this project. And the individual just did not appreciate my delivery. He felt like I was in a different position than he was, and it would have been fine if it came from my leader who I was attempting to emulate. And for all the reasons that I don't think that what he said was correct, what I took away from that was that in order for the message to be heard and the person who, like, gave me that feedback, it's like sometimes, you know, you've got to understand the motivations of your audience to be able to get your message across. And if your goal is to get that message across and to achieve that overall objective, you might have to approach it in a way that is not the most comfortable for you or might be challenging you. Or maybe you think, gosh, I shouldn't even have to do this. But if your ultimate goal is to get a group of people aligned, you're going to have to be willing to flex your style beyond what you would hope or think. And I was very fortunate to get that. Like, my first job out of college, I got that sort of a message. And it has totally stuck. I was not leading people at the time, right? I was in HR. But it's forced me to think on how to be even more creative, to tailor my message to the audience, to connect that, like, what is in it for them and how to motivate them through values of their own. So that's mine.
I'm going to go with a little more recent thing. I have a lot of good advice of late. And the thing that's, like, really eaten at me is this statement that, like, no one cares if you're right. People care if, like, as an organization, we care about, like, what can you do well, right? And so oftentimes we want to live and think about, like, what we should do or what we could do or what the best optimal solution is. But at the end of the day, the best thing is what you can do well as a person, as a leader, as a team, as an organization, right? And so for me, Ash, I think you probably understand this. It resonates as a behavior analyst, is that we can just sit back and think about, like, what's the most optimal system that we could put in place, right? Like, what would be the ideal situation? You know, if I was a DCS, in a center, and I was like, you know, how would I run this? Like, what were the choices that I would make to run this thing? That might be idealistic, right? But when you think about, like, well, what are the decisions you could do? So you could do that across 150 centers, right? And do that well, it's a different thing. And so oftentimes I find myself talking about the ideal and like getting stuck on being right versus being stuck on like, how can we do this well and drive forward with that? So execution over like ideation is something that I've really have been able to focus on.
So it's like what I'm hearing from Matt, like just like start. Is that kind of what I'm hearing? Yeah. Or just like you have to think of the whole picture?
Be open to evolving and innovating and feedback and shaping. Yeah.
And I want to like, I know I like praise Centria a lot, and it's because I feel like, and this is compared to other companies and the people I've talked to, all those pieces, is that like, we're always willing to try new things. And when I have new clinicians starting, I do usually start with that is like, we're not a company that's going to stay the same because it's the same old, same old. We're going to be changing those things. And that's such an important thing to move forward, to be able to make, like, if you keep the same old, same old, we would probably still be all riding a horse and buggy. I don't know why that's the first thing I went to, but.
It's for sure. As a behavior analyst, we know we have to vary our behavior to access reinforcement, right? And as an organization, we have to vary our behavior to achieve the things that we want to achieve and hit the goals that we want to hit. We can't keep doing the same things.
No. And if it's not working, why are we trying? And I mean, it's the same thing with our kids, right? Like, we're not going to let a program keep running and running and running. We're going to need to make changes or run it a different way to figure out what's going to work for them.
Agreed.
Okay. Leadership advice. Leadership advice. I honestly think my best leadership advice has come from, I know I've talked a lot about my therapist here. Highly recommend therapy, obviously. Had to come from my first therapist that was that you need to get yourself not settled necessarily, but get yourself into a good place to be able to help others. Because if I'm coming in and I'm in a really, really rough place, I really only have two options. One, I can label it and be like, hey, this is where I'm at today, which is okay to do. But it's also my responsibility as a leader to come in the best prepared that I can. And that doesn't mean I used to do the Miracle Morning. Was it called? Do you guys know? I give you guys a lot of hat tricks.
Yeah.
Where is that coming? Is it called the Miracle Morning? Like those five things you could do. So it was this Miracle Morning book, which now I don't do any of them most mornings. I just drink a glass of water. But having something before you come in as a leader to kind of prepare that for your day. So that way you're giving yourself a little before you're giving everyone else. Because as leaders, you give a lot of yourself. It takes a lot of mental, physical, all that energy. You have to take some for yourself too to be able to get there. Otherwise, you're going to always run on empty. And then what I meant by the Miracle Morning is it's a book. I don't know if I'd recommend it, honestly. But he recommends like 3 hours in the morning to do 5 different tasks. One of them exercise, writing, I think it's eating breakfast, and 2 other tasks. But doing something to get yourself, fill up your cup before you fill up everybody else's.
Makes sense.
Or you're mentally giving everything.
Sure. And I think that is crucial, right? I mean, just like we said earlier, like leaders are people too. And so, you know, you need to make sure that in order to bring yourself, that you're going to be able to give and invest in your team. You can't be pouring from an empty cup, right? To use that kind of idiom. I think, you know, so the second part of this question is for folks who are listening that are aspiring to move into leadership roles, what sort of advice would you give them to ready themselves for that sort of an opportunity or to ready their mindset for such?
So I'm going to go back to therapy for a second. However, therapy is a privilege. It is. So, but one thing you can do if you can't access that is just begin with something simple to begin reflecting. Because that's kind of like, I've done a lot of trauma work therapy, so that's a very different piece. But even before that, like getting yourself the tools to be able to do not only the reflection, but then also like, here's where I'm at, here's who I am, and getting very secure with what your strengths are and then what your weaknesses are. I think has been one thing that's really been helpful to me. I've been fortunate enough to be able to do a lot of that work through therapy, but even when I couldn't access that, I was doing those pieces to be able to kind of drive myself forward. Also with that, like accessing a lot of different leaders, like through books. And if you're not a book reader, there's podcasts or you can listen to YouTube in the background. Like there's many different ways you can access different leaders and different perspectives. And it doesn't have to be always leaders. I shouldn't say that. Like I love to read. So like reading Black authors, Latinx authors, like accessing as much different perspectives as you possibly can.
Yeah.
I think there's a level of professional humility that's required when you go from like an individual contributor to a leader of people that I think you're getting that right, which is, you have to be able to be honest with yourself on like who you are as a leader, where you're at as a leader. Because the truth is most of the people that you're leading already know that, right? And like not being able to identify and be honest about that only robs yourself from feedback. Even if the feedback's hard to hear, just it separates that. And having a clarity around strengths and weaknesses for me is, I get that completely. That is a critical step for especially for an industry, even our company that has, you know, so many professionals that are like early in their career and like leadership is something they're aspiring for, the be able to get to a place of like just like honest vulnerability with who you are and where you're at as a professional is a critical first step.
And your weaknesses too, because like I think some people want to put themselves on a pedestal and be like, hey, I'm perfect. But being able to say, hey, I'm not perfect. Like I will can admit one of my weaknesses is when I am frustrated, I don't always mean the words that I say. Like I will just say it out of frustration and then have to kind of backtrack myself. Cause like, I'll be like, I don't actually mean this. I'm just frustrated. And the way my brain works when I'm frustrated, I go to 100, even if I'm only at a 20. I don't get frustrated that often. And I shouldn't even say that. Like, but it's a skill I have to work on. It's a weakness. So I guess here's a question I have for you guys. And Lisa, feel free to go back to your question is, like, what would you guys say your weakness currently is as a leader and how are you working kind of on those pieces?
Yeah. And
let me go first.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, I've got one. So
her weakness is always have the answers. I'm joking, Lisa.
Probably true.
Kind of. Couple things I want to say before I answer this question, though, is there's a book called Strength Finders that I recommend like people like pick up, and there's a Gallup assessment you can take around it. And that book to me, that book was like enlightening to me because I had two like successive, like from the outside, people said they were successful career jobs and roles. But I found a lot of failure in them and I felt a lot of guilt and shame around them. And they led me to like solely focus on my weaknesses. And I just thought that like, you know, I just need to like improve these areas of my life and then I'll be a better leader. If I could just be this type of leader, you know, that I was envisioning, then I would be better. And in reality, I was spending so much time on skills and domains of like of leadership that like I'll never be good at. And really what I was robbing was like the areas that I'm really great at. Right. And so there's two people that come to mind in our organization right now. It's like, I'm never going to be Dr. Callahan and I'm never going to be Kasia Coates. Like I'll never be them. Right. Like Callahan's the type of person that I always like, you know, like I always envision myself as like when I'm a senior, like older elder, I want to be like that kind of like, you know, therapist perspective and just like a gentle coach that everyone can like just be comfortable talking to. That's never going to be me. That's like just like silly, but that's like an idealistic perspective that I had. Or Kasia is like a great executor where she can get things done. She's organized. She's on top of it. Like, yes, those are things that I want to like develop, but you can't spend all your time on your weaknesses. With that said, I focus on one weakness at a time. And right now the weakness that I'm, currently working through is just being reactive. At times I find myself being too too reactive and not curious. And so, you know, I'll get an email or a message, or we'll be in a meeting, something said, and I will just feel like, you know, an emotional reaction. And instead of taking a moment and being curious about why I'm feeling that, why, and why people are saying what they're saying, I tend to overreact and react quickly. And that is not how you create an environment of safety. And it's not how you create an environment of like collaboration and brainstorming and solution finding. So that's my area.
Yeah. I think for me, the thing that I'm trying to work on and reorient myself to is having the discipline, you know, a couple things, right? It's like taking the pause, and we can all get, can become victim to this, where you go from one meeting to the next, to the next. And you forget to take that pause to orient yourself on what your objective is in that meeting, to be able to drive the discussion, the thoughts, the behaviors to align to that. And, you know, not that you can't, right, have an answer in the moment or do good, but I'm robbing myself and potentially the people on that call of me being the best, right, by not taking the time to plan. And I don't need 30 minutes to plan for a meeting, but I do need a couple minutes to orient myself. And I think similarly, I've noticed just summer's just a busy time in a really great way. And we've got a lot of new team members on the HR operations team, two new business partners. And I think with that, like, you can get swept up into, you know, getting people and your team, especially while we're still down our benefits specialist, right? Getting things kind of to a certain place. But with that, you can forget to carve out the time to introspect, right? Like you were talking about that being such a key role. But moreover, I've gotten out of the habit that I need to work on and build back in, where I'm taking opportunities to be reflective and creative and curious about how to evolve to that next level. Because when you're just doing, right, you don't take that pause to really, I guess, more clearly orient yourself and your own goals, right, to where you can be effective as a leader, both of your team and within a function organizationally. And so that's something that I'm kind of having to reorient myself to, both of those things. So slowing down and reminding that, like, you can give yourself the opportunity to be your best self through a little bit of planning and through being really thoughtful about what you're going to approach and how you're going to approach it.
And I think, like, a question I ask myself often, and I would love your guys' perspective on this, is how do you guys, when you, like, we all have a lot of meetings for various reasons.
Yeah.
Like, and there's sometimes they are back to back to back, and you want to give yourself to others, but then also meet those goals. How do you work towards that? And like, even simple strategies that you guys utilize for that.
For me, sometimes I'm late to meetings. And when I'm late to meetings, really, it's just taking 2 minutes for myself. And so I force a break. There's certain activities that I do. I'll go for a walk. I will do some breathing exercises at my desk. I'll do some meditative exercises that I have at my desk. But I try to force it. I'm not good at, I need to be better at ending meetings earlier than the top of the hour. But when I don't, I make sure to like prioritize myself, and I'll run a couple minutes late. I'll communicate that I'm gonna be 5 minutes late, and I'll take that time.
And it's never the end of the world if you're 5 minutes late. I think one thing I personally do is I'll be like, well, this person wants 5 minutes of my time, and I know that they want this, but
they want your best time though. People want your best time.
Yeah, they do. I think for me, it's time blocking, right? Like, intentions don't get you anywhere. It's the action that gets you somewhere. And so I really try to, like, I know personally, just like a rule that my brain operates by, is that if it's not on my calendar, it's not going to get done. Like, the sticky notes don't work. Like, writing something down doesn't work. I have to physically put it in my calendar, and I have to see that reminder come on my phone. I have to see it visibly in my calendar. And so for me, if I have meetings back to back, I know that that's a day that, like, I'm not going to get something done. So I will look at my calendar every day at the end of the day and at the beginning of the day, and make sure that it's aligned with what I need to get done. And I'm time blocking work, or, you know, carving time out for my team if they're going to need something or what have you. Like, you just have to, the day doesn't run me. I choose to run the day. And it will run me if I don't build in those moments to be able to be effective, in addition to being able to be an advisor or a collaborator or a decision maker on certain elements that I have to be. So I would recommend that. I mean, my team is familiar with that, but you got to just carve out the time to do the work, because intentions won't bring you anywhere.
Okay. Oh yeah. It's I think you said something really good there that I'm just gonna restate. It's like it's intention plus action.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You can have all the intentions in the world, but if you're not taking any action steps forward, you're not. You're just gonna kind of sit in that place.
Yeah, you're robbing yourself of the ability to feel that win. You know, so.
Awesome. Well, Ashley, thank you. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy day. Really appreciate the time to talk to you.
Thank you. It was really nice chatting too. It was so nice meeting with you.
Yeah, you as well, Ashley.
So good seeing you, and I hope you guys have a great day. I'm not as nervous. I'm not as nervous at the end.
Good.
So I want to talk about perspective taking. Okay. It was something that Ashley brought up in our conversation with her, and how her role as a leader somewhat evolved as her ability to like take perspective, reflect, and think through. And perspective taking for me in the behavior analytic literature is when I first started seeing the science of behavior analysis as a much broader theory of behavior that's okay. Not always around observable, measurable things. It is, but it isn't. And perspective taking is like one of those examples, and I pulled up an article here. Perspective taking sometimes is referred to as theory of mind, is thought, and some of the research strongly suggests that it's one of the key behaviors that underlies like social skills and social development. There's a lot of research to show how we can like teach perspective taking. It's a big challenge for children and development in general. And
sure.
Having kids yourself, right? Like you can understand the journey that one takes to like be able to take the perspective of others and how we teach it. There's some really cool interventions that we can run as a behavior analysts working on perspective taking. Mm-hmm. I won't go through all of them because it gets kind of a mouthful, but I could tell you like a question that we could ask a client when working with them is like, if I were you and you were me, who would you be looking at?
Okay.
And the answer you would say?
Me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Or if I were you and you were me, I could ask you, what would you be wearing? Or what shirt would you be, be wearing right now, right? You talk about the shirt that I'm wearing.
Yeah.
Could talk about if I were you and you were me and today was yesterday and yesterday was today, right? Like what happened today? And then you'd have to like all these things. There's just, that might not be the best worded question, but there's a lot of different things that you can think about to like start to challenge people to, get into people's perspective.
And can I ask a question about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I'm understanding that is kind of just like seeing things from other people's vantage point, right? Yep. And understanding that like, yeah, okay, that person who cut you off, sure, you're upset about it, but maybe they are trying to rush to the hospital because they're pregnant.
For sure.
Right? So it's that sort of a thing, which is interesting because like some of the research that I have like come upon is that as a mindset, like children at the age of like 7, 8, 9, they can't even like understand truly empathy. They can observe what someone is feeling, but they can't feel what they're feeling until their brain has developed to a certain point. 100%. So is it that in ABA, we might be teaching some of our younger clients just that first step of like, what the are you observing? Step, yeah. Because to develop that mindset might require your brain to also be slightly more mature.
I'm by no means an expert here, but there's definitely a developmental sequence, right?
Sure.
And empathy is like the final step to this sequence.
Yeah.
But first, in order to do it, there's like concrete things that you have to do, right? And I think about like our newborns, right? Like,
yeah,
they don't even know they exist, right? they only see like what they see, but they don't see what mirror. They don't even know they're part of this world, right? And so there's a journey that people go through in taking perspectives. And to me, I think it's and the reason why I wanted to talk about it and how Ashley brought it up was that as a leader, being able to take perspectives is so critical.
And, absolutely.
And you even brought it up in our talk with Ashley around the perspective of the audience and like what are their motivations. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I can think of so many times where I like failed to take the perspective and the impacts of that. And it's something we got to do better. We got to be better at.
I totally hear you on that. I think about like the times where I'm like, oh, I like, this is my idea and I want to push this idea or this opinion out. Is like trying to, it's almost failing to take some of their perspective through curiosity first, right? And instead it's kind of like just, I've noticed that like, well, I'm just going to push this because I like think it's the best. And I think that as a more junior leader, that was probably more of my approach as opposed to, you know, having that level of curiosity to understand where other people are coming from to then incorporate like, oh gosh, if that's how they're feeling, we probably have dozens of other team members that feel that way too. And so we should try and incorporate that. So I think that's a great concept to be talking about like different perspectives and curiosity to really tie into what Ashley was saying, because it's hard to be effective in any role with people without understanding the perspective.
The value of curiosity is it leads to like questions that you can ask, right? And questions help you understand somebody's perspective. You know, as a behavior analyst, we think about things in the environment. Environments are like the environment is all the stimuli that we engage with, see, hear, touch, taste, feel. And, you know, I could be sitting in the same room with someone. And in reality, though, the environment that they're experiencing is could be much different than the environment that I'm experiencing, right? Mm-hmm. The things that they're coming in contact with. And so it's really important because as a behavior analyst, we think, you know, I personally think as a behavior analyst, I also think that we are a summation of all of our experiences. And so the words that we're saying now, right, connect with past experiences and change the context with which we're having a conversation today. But your past experiences are different than my past experiences. Sure. So what is being said may mean something completely different to you than it does to me, right? Yep. And by being curious, it allows you to start to understand the environment of that person, to what could be contributing to their perspective of that experience or what's happening. And yeah, I think that's one of the things we talk about, just being culturally responsive, is that like everyone brings something different to the table, and being curious definitely helps us understand those things when things are like maybe broken or like not working or not understood.
Yeah. It feels like understanding the perspectives, whether it's of your team or the audience or like, you know, the organization, right, that might be cooked in there, is a key to being effective.
Yeah.
Right. And not to make something
it's
right.
Really being effective. It, being right. Right.
Correct. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and
why aren't they doing this? They should be doing this. If I was in their role, I would do the same thing. Right. And the truth is, it's like, you know, I think we have to operate from a fundamental position. Is like, people are good. Our employees are good. And for the most part, they want to do a great job. And when we're not doing a great job, there's a reason. And in order to figure that out, we have to take the perspective of the people that are working for us and trying so hard every single day.
Yeah. So would you say that in order to kind of curate that mindset of like, or to build the skill set and being able to understand perspectives, I'm hearing curiosity, right? Yeah. So first of all, just challenging that they don't think the way you do, and you'll never know how they think unless you ask, right? Yeah. I like that kind of, you know, trick that you're saying, like, well, if I were them and they were me, maybe these starting with some observations, what are some other ways that you could develop a mindset towards being more successful in understanding perspectives?
You actually mentioned it in our conversation with Ashley, which is like, and she did too, is like separating. You talked about like separating your career from who you are, right? There's also like good work on diffusion techniques, cognitive diffusion techniques of like separating your thoughts from who you are, right?
Yeah.
Like we think for a variety of reasons. Our thoughts aren't always representative of like what we actually think, right? Our thoughts are not always accurate in their interpretations of things, right? But they are something that's adding to the environment that we like are living in. And so one thing is to get more curious, not just about people's perspectives, but curious about the thoughts that you're having and why you're having them. So like creating space to think about those. Also, the same line as it, creating space between yourself and your work, right? Like when I'm at my worst, my work represents me and I am my work, right? And feedback against my work is feedback against me personally. And
yeah,
when I talked earlier about being reactive, that's when it is reactive, because like there, I don't have that space. And so I think that like being able to be open to other people's perspectives, you have to be very clear about like what their perspectives were about and what their perspectives are not about. And is it about you? Is it about your work? Is it like, those are separate things that I think, and also just giving people the benefit of the doubt.
Totally.
A lot can be had as a result of like assuming best intentions from everyone in your life.
I completely agree. I think it's so interesting because oftentimes we do that for ourselves. Like if you're misunderstood or something happens in a meeting, you're like, well, I'm sure they'll understand. I had this, this, and this. And we hope that people are giving us the benefit of the doubt. And so us going through that exercise and practicing that with others is going to be key. And now you're eliminating assumptions that skew towards negative.
Yeah.
And adding an assumption that is as generous as possible to them as a person, I think helps just develop that they are a person who is inherently valuable. And they matter, and therefore their perspective matters.
Yeah. There's a saying that goes that the quickest way to turn a behavior analyst into a mentalist is to talk about their staff's behavior. Because like we give all the benefit of the doubt to our clients. We tell them that our clients never respond in a wrong way. They just respond in a way that's worked for them historically. And it's our job just to support them and like give them the tools, the training, the coaching, the feedback to like grow. But when we like at times people can err on the side of talking about their employees' behavior of like in a completely much more judgmental way, mm-hmm. right? Like not giving that benefit of the doubt, being more quick to judge, more quick to like not be curious and take that same type of coaching perspective. And I think, you know, the work that we do across every role in organizations, you know, there's hard moments and when people aren't performing, very few times is it because they don't want to perform.
Yeah. And it's easier to tell yourself that narrative because it becomes easier to coach a bad person, right? Yeah. Than it is to take the time to be curious to understand a perspective. And
but like, also absolve yourself of all the responsibility of their performance.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, it's not the solution, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is interesting. I have to say, I really appreciate that Ashley connected that. She said that, right? She was like, you know, I had to apply some of the same, my background in behavior analysis and trying to curate an environment to get the behaviors I wanted to see when I was going through mentorship and as a leader. Yeah. And, you know, it's not exactly the same. We're not writing treatment plans, right? But it takes, there are what I see from an outsider looking in, some very similar things that it starts with a baseline understanding that the behavior can be changed mm-hmm. in the right environment. And that goes for a team member and for an autistic client.
Yeah, 100%. Like I think that as a behavior analyst, we fundamentally think, feel, and operate from a position that all behaviors able to be changed, given the right environment and the right set of consequences and contingencies and tools and supports. And the challenge, though, is that as an organization, as a leader, while you can have that fundamental position, there's two choices that you have to make. And one, and David, our boss, says as well, which is there's two types of challenges. Is it like a skill deficit or a values deficit? And when it's a skills deficit, those are things that we can work through, right? Those are environmental changes that we can make, tools, training, support. When it's a misalignment of values, like that's something that like could change over time. But like as a leader, that's probably not your job to like work through like how we're going to change someone's values, right? Let me say it ain't your job to like work. That is a lot more of a self-reflection and a self-journey than a journey with your boss.
I agree. I would say, I think as a leader, taking the step of pointing that out though, and being really clear on I'm noticing a misalignment of values and being clear on these are what are values and this is my expectation for behaviors or, you know, activity or whatever that would be. I would agree that that is still the role of a leader. But the work that needs to be done, I think we're fundamentally aligned that might be on the person and that might be self-selecting out.
Yeah.
Right?
We even know that organizations, like, we have certain practices that we just don't allow as an organization, and some behavior analysts like see those practices as part of their skill set. And it's not a position of like judgment. It's just like, this is just not a place that like you can like thrive, right?
Yeah.
If that's important to you, then there's other organizations that you can practice in.
Yeah. You know, and I know we've kind of gone to a different spot here, but there's, I know you've heard me say this, and I've said this to a couple other people too, and that whole like concept of being clear on your values, because some people may not align, and like from a business perspective, and that's actually a really responsible thing. And coming down to it, it's like not every shoe fits, right?
Right.
Fundamentally, there's nothing wrong with the shoe, and there's nothing wrong with the foot. It is not a fit. And it's better to know who you are, both as a company and as an individual. And if you're doing the right things, right, that's what matters. And being very clear, and you and I have talked about this too, it's like being very clear with, this is our creed, this is what we do, allows people to make that decision maybe sooner than later, and to hopefully find a fit that's great for them, because that's truly what our goal would be, right?
Yeah. And I would say this is probably, it's the same conversation in my book. That's a leader's taking a perspective of their people, right? Like, you're not going to judge the foot that a shoe doesn't work, but you're going to understand it, right? And you're going to see like, is it doesn't fit because you're not putting it on right, or is it just not a good fit, right? And I think that's a perspective that we need to take. And and oftentimes a leader can like take a position of like judgment against themselves or others in those moments. Like, I'm not a good leader because it's not a good fit, right? Or they're not a good employee because it's not a good fit. But in reality, it's just not a good fit. And at times that's okay.
Yeah, totally.
Well, Lisa, it's good talking to you again.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Evolves my thinking every time.
Appreciate that too.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Timothy.
And that concludes another episode of us telling the stories of our incredible staff and their work to support our powerful mission. Until next week, do wonders.